Good morning. I'm Wade Cleveland, and I'm joined by a native Yarmouthian now living in Halifax who has made a career of writing, not just fiction, but travel writing as well, Bruce Bishop. And we're going to talk about his second novel, Uncommon Sons, and talk about being a writer in this day and age as well. Bruce, thank you so much for being here.
Always a pleasure, Wade. Thank you.
First off, let me be gushing. I loved Uncommon Sons. I thought it was an amazing novel, and I read your first one and enjoyed it very much as well. I really liked it, Unconventional Daughters. Found this one even more compelling, written with a lot of confidence as well. And I wanted to start with the question as to writing a second novel. Are there any lessons that you gleaned from your first novel?
Oh, for sure. Yes, you do. I think in particular when you get reader feedback after the debut novel, so to speak, you want to become a better writer, I think, with everything that you write. And the second time around is a little bit sweeter because you've learned some lessons from the first and have corrected them and moving forward. So, sure.
All right. So Unconventional Daughters, the first one. Uncommon Sons, the second one, both historical novels, both set in the same universe with some characters from the first running through the second. What was that like, kind of continuing that story? Was that something the minute you finished Unconventional Daughters that you wanted to do?
I think so, but it was even before then. As I was writing Unconventional Daughters, the trend these days seems to be for most authors is to write in a series. Sometimes just in a trilogy, or other times, you know, maybe 10 novels in a series, possibly because of the rise in independent publishing. I'm not quite sure. But as I was writing Unconventional Daughters, I thought there's so much more to these characters that I can continue on with. But I knew that I didn't want to write a sequel in the traditional sense of the word. I wanted the second book to be interlinked so that one could read the first or the second book at the beginning. It wouldn't really matter. You know, you wouldn't have to read book number one before reading book number two. So I was happy that I did it that way, because it does get new readers in some ways, not just the ones who purchased your first book. And I plan on doing the same with the third book and moving the time period ahead about 20 years.
Aha, so that answers my next question, whether or not this is going to become a trilogy. Very good.
I think so, yeah.
All right, terrific. Tell us a little bit about Uncommon Sons for those who aren't aware of what the plot is. What is this book about?
I guess when I moved back to Halifax after living in Yarmouth for 13 years most recently, I began to remember things of what life was like here in Halifax when I was going to school here in the 70s, in the late 70s, and seeing how some businesses had survived and thrived and others were long gone. And that really prompted a bit of research of what life was like here in the Depression years before World War II, and you know what had stayed, and as I said, thrived, and what had left, whether it be a business like Mills Brothers, which only recently closed about I think 3 or 4 years ago, to places like Point Pleasant Park, which is still very much a fixture of Halifax life and Halifax geography. So I thought that by having the protagonist, the main character, moves in from book number one, moves to Halifax, and I wanted to see more of her or write more about her, but also wanted to take a minor character from book one and place him in book two as the lead character, as the protagonist. And then upon doing that or making that decision, then all of a sudden the world just opened up for me in Halifax in 1935. At first you'd think there wouldn't be a whole lot happening because it was the Depression years, but then again there was a lot happening all over the world. So I was able to take world events and sort of incorporate them into the storyline of book two.
This book goes in with its eyes wide open. I guess that's the best way to put it. It starts off with a murder, leads into a very riveting story about these characters. These characters, by the way, and again, this is my compliment to you. These characters jump off the page and they stay with you after reading the novel. They're very, very good. But you tackle everything from the strictness of Lebanese culture to sexual identity to many other kind of issues. That racism is huge in this particular novel. There's a lot to this. There's a lot of meat on the bones.
I think I did tackle a few topics that I almost didn't expect to, and yet sometimes the words write themselves and the characters kind of pop out at you. When I moved back to Halifax too, and I remember just last year going down to see the park where Africville used to be, and seeing how beautiful this park is, overlooking the Bedford Basin. And when you look at the plaques that are up there showing photographs of what Africville was before it was bulldozed in the 1960s, I thought, how can I incorporate this sad, sad part of Halifax history into the book? And not being black myself, how can I even write a black character, especially in 1935-36? So I wanted Africville, and I wanted an African Nova Scotian secondary character to make people think of what life was like here and what happened. Similarly with Lebanese immigrants who came here in the late 1800s. I mean, they are a tremendous force of civic and economic pride, I guess you'd say, within the province. But also it's a traditional culture, and it's a combination Muslim and Christian, Maronite Christian culture. So I had introduced a character of a Lebanese Nova Scotian in the first book, but just touched upon his life. He is gay, or back then, of course, it would just be he's homosexual. But again, a name that wasn't even used in the 1930s or very rarely. And being from a Lebanese background, of course, he had to be closeted. But it wouldn't even matter if he was Lebanese Nova Scotian or not. Nobody could declare himself or herself to be homosexual in the 1930s because you'd lose your job or maybe even be thrown in jail. So again, by looking at the past, we can see how discrimination has shaped our thoughts of today, I think, with knowledge of diversity and appreciation for immigrant groups and racialized people who have just suffered so much in the past. I think it makes it easier to understand some troubles that we have today.
What kind of research goes into this? Because it must be very heavily researched. It feels like a living thing. The city feels real and very compelling from 1935. How much work was that to get into that kind of an historical context?
A fair bit, I would say, because I want, you know, being a former travel journalist, I want everything to be accurate. I don't want to surmise too much. I want to base my fiction on fact. And so, yes, I did do quite a bit of research into not only Lebanese culture, but Black Nova Scotian history and all of that. So I can say one thing, though, is that I find it hard to imagine how, let's say, a historical fiction author or writer of 50 years ago, how much time he or she would have spent at a library, a traditional library, because if it wasn't for Google, honest to God, I don't know if I could have gotten through either of the books. Because, again, Google leads to YouTube, and you can find amazing old black and white newsreels from the 30s on YouTube, and some of Nova Scotia and Halifax and what it looked like and what it felt like. And all of a sudden, seeing those old black and white newsreels, just it really sparks the imagination.
I would think so. Now, what's your process in actually sitting down and writing? Do you outline? How much time are you spending, for example, a day? I'm very curious about this. How's the writing itself go?
Oh, gosh, Wade, it's sporadic. I don't know. I'm not terribly disciplined. I do it. I write when the mood strikes. Past week or two, it's been terrible. I haven't written much of anything except a whole lot of emails. But no, I think when when a writer formulates a storyline and you give yourself, or at least I do, a deadline in my mind, I want to be finished by such and such a date, because then you know of all the procedures that have to happen after that with editing and proofreading and choosing a cover and et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not terribly disciplined, but then again, I've always got a deadline in mind.
Okay. Now that leads nicely into my next question when it comes to putting this thing together. You're self-published. And my copy is a Kindle edition, so you work with Amazon. I know that you're doing everything yourself. That has to feel, I would think, at least from the start of it. Now you have a template because you've done it before, but it must feel a bit overwhelming at times because there's so much to do, and it's for you to do specifically.
That's very true, and I think the marketing in and of itself is probably the hardest part. The writing is a joy. I mean, I love writing, and I love making up characters and developing a storyline. But the marketing can be completely overwhelming because, again, you have to think to yourself, how much money can I spend on advertising, for example? How much should I devote to social media? What social media platforms are better than others? So you experiment. I find Twitter is lousy. Instagram, pretty good. Facebook, even better. But you're right. I the old expression, chief cook and bottle washer. You do everything, and you hope that you're good enough to be a success at some level to make a living at it.
All right. So, tell me the process. Now, you've gotten a novel written. From the time that you have it together and you're ready to publish it yourself, how long does that take? What kind of a process is that?
Well, I think, for example, I took an online course from a British author who is well known in the industry as being kind of the self-publishing guru, Mark Dawson. And it was tremendously helpful because he literally puts the steps right out there in front of you in a series of modules that you watch and study from. And it's like ticking off all the check boxes. In some ways, doing what a traditional publisher would do for the author, but doing it on your own, you've got to do everything on your own. And by following his steps, I guess, led me to getting the first one published. So it's a long process. I don't think it's for the faint of heart. I think people also have to remember that most authors make very, very little money from writing their books. Not everybody is John Grisham. Not everybody is Stephen King. That's for darn sure. Mm-hmm. So you've got to go in, you mentioned the expression, eyes wide open in this business for sure.
I would think so. Okay, so from what's happening now, I know you're talking about a third novel and you've mentioned working on it. When can we expect that third novel to be in our hands?
That's my personal deadline in my brain, that I've got to get this released by next summer, perhaps a year from when the first book was released. The second book, which was released this past June. And mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, okay, give me a year, and I hope I can get part three out, and it will take place in Yarmouth in 1956. It will include one of the minor characters from the first and second books, only now he's an adult, and he works in Yarmouth, and that's about all I'll tell you right now.
Well, I will give you an opportunity to get some free marketing in, at least, because the two novels together would really make a great Christmas present for the reader out there.
Yeah, I sure hope people will consider one or both of the novels as Christmas gifts. I hope to be down in Yarmouth during the first week of November to do another sale and signing of the books at the Yarmouth Mall. I will be checking with the Yarmouth Mall on availability and all of that. But yeah, they're on order. They will be here, and I'll be there with bells on, so to speak.
Bruce, all the best. Congratulations on the two novels so far, and I wish you all the best in the future. Hopefully we can catch up soon.
I really appreciate it. appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Wade.